Hi, you're listening to the Full Life Podcast with Melanie Lynham.
Can you imagine living on an island and being faced with a Category 5 typhoon? That is exactly what happened to John and Christine and their two daughters. 1 year ago, John and Christine and their daughters, Chili and Asha, were living on the island of Siargao in the Philippine Islands when a Category 5 typhoon tore through, devastating homes and lives. Surviving the storm was just the beginning. What followed in the days and weeks after would take a bigger toll on them and the community as they rallied together to rebuild their island and their lives. While many people were waking on Christmas Day to find beautifully wrapped presents under a decorated Christmas tree, this family were waking to a shortage of food, water, and no electricity. But instead of focusing on what they were going without, this family got to work helping the families around them. And just wait until you hear what they did for some of the other kids living on the island on Christmas Day. John and Christine share with us their incredible journey from the storm to rebuilding. Welcome, Christine and John, back to the Full Life Podcast. It's so good to have you back and to see your faces. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're doing really well. It's been pretty full on since we came back last August 2021. We came back to the Philippines and we got stuck in Australia for a little bit due to COVID.
Yeah.
And ever since then, we've hit the ground running.
We hit the ground running, then we fell over, and then we continued running. It's been a pretty hectic, crazy,
yeah.
What, 7 months? No, I think almost 10 months.
We've been back, yeah. So when we first had our conversation, you guys were like my first ever episode. So for anyone listening, if you want to go back to episode number one, easy to find. And in that conversation, we talked about how God initially called you guys onto the mission field into the Philippine Islands and just what that was like for you guys. And I actually went back and listened to that again. So I feel like we had a conversation, a little catch up like a few days ago. It's all fresh in my mind. When you first went over to the Philippine Islands, your two girls were, correct me if I'm wrong, but Chili was 4 and Asha was 9 weeks old, something like that.
Yeah.
And then when we had our conversation 2 years ago, Chili was 7 and Asha was 4, possibly.
Yep.
Yeah, 7 turning 8 maybe. Yeah. And so how old are your girls now? Add 2. So 8, 9.
Chili's gonna be 11 this year and Asha will be 8 this year.
I think your maths might be off.
Yeah, my maths is definitely off. Doesn't work. Unless you're wrong.
It's possibly 3.5, maybe 4 years since we
No. That's a lot. What?
We were back for a year and a half.
We've been in Australia for 18 months. Like it's
Yeah, my maths is very much off. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Pandemic time sucks, but we still have to count it. It's still a part of the timeline.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So in December last year, I did check up on these numbers, so I've got this right. December last year, 2021, so that was for us right now at time of recording, that's 7 months ago. You guys went through something so massive. The Philippine Islands was hit with a super typhoon, like the biggest storm they've had since the 1980s. About 388 people are estimated to have died in that storm. And you guys were right there when it happened. When it hit your island, it had maximum sustained winds of 195 kilometers per hour. And you guys lost food, water, electricity. Can you take us through all of that? What was that like? Like the lead up, did you have much warning that it was coming?
We knew there was a typhoon coming and like a few days out, it was estimated to be Category 2, which is only like 100 to 150 kilometer hour, which is big, but we've had that before. And it's like we were all like, yeah, okay, it'll make a little bit of damage, but it's not too bad. And then literally I woke up in the morning at like 6 o'clock and looked at my phone and everyone was going nuts saying, it's a super typhoon category 5, and you just saw the picture of it, it was like, no. And I woke up John and said, John, it's a category 5. He's like, that's impossible. It can't go from a 2 to a 5. And then it had, and so it was meant to hit us at 1 by 9 o'clock. We'd lost power. We'd lost power, and we'd lost all signal communication. So all phones were out. Yeah, 11. And then people, because we live right next door to our school, and so people started coming to the school, and because we have like full concrete building, so especially down the bottom, and it's got concrete ceiling and walls, and it's like a concrete box. So we had people starting to come then. Resorts were starting to evacuate their people, and a lot of them were coming to us. And so, but at the same time, everyone was still like, oh, this is fun. Like, you know, when you haven't been through anything like that, it's like.
You know, there was literally, I think the night before when it was a category 2, Christine actually said it'd be interesting to see what it would be like to go through a big storm.
Oh.
Like just to see what it was like. And I'm not saying, like, she obviously didn't talk to us throughout lives, but.
Famous answer. Thank you, Christine.
I wasn't thinking about the aftermath. I was just thinking how surreal it would be to experience it, but not even considering what would happen after it. And so, everyone was there.
It was funny, we became sort of unofficial. Not really talked about place of evacuation. Like, it was sort of just word of mouth, and a few people messaged when there was some signal saying, and we said, look, come if you want to, then just come. Don't think about it. Just get to the school, because we're pretty confident the school wasn't going to blow over no matter what happened. We didn't let people go upstairs because there's a roof upstairs. There's stuff that could have fallen down. So we sort of approached it pretty careful, but we said, then come on, come on, whoever can. And we had probably 100 plus people coming.
Like, as the morning went on, the wind started picking up a little bit. But see, we didn't know because we didn't have signal. We had no way of knowing what was happening with the storm. Like, the last post that we had, the eye of the storm was coming directly over us. So we were all just assuming and that was going to happen about 1 o'clock. And so, once we lost all signal, we didn't know what was happening. And so we were just watching and monitoring.
The wind was also in a good direction. From wherever the school's located, we weren't really feeling much wind, which was, it helped with our confidence. We just sort of sat. Even on the second balcony, we sort of watched and just chilled out as a group.
Yeah, and then there was roofs like across the road. We had the store owners there. They were actually in our school. And they were just watching me watch their roof blow up. And everyone was like, oh, and then the church, like where the pastors live, like their church is right next to us also. Their house where they live right next to the church, their roof started blowing off. And then we were like, but it was still, we were still standing out, not outside, but under a cover outside. And it got to a point where we walked upstairs to sort of see what was happening. And there was leaves starting to blow off trees, and like there was gusts starting, like really strong gusts starting to come through, and I was like, I think we should go down now. It's getting a bit scary. So we all went down, and then literally it was like,
I like to mention it's sort of like a car. So throughout the day in the morning, so it was in like third gear, and okay, we're expecting it to pick up, and then the next gear would come up with a gust of wind or whatever, and then it was in fourth gear, and then by sort of 12 o'clock, the wind was, like, trees were snapping and twisting around us. There was no way you'd consider going outside. And then I was thinking, oh, this is fifth gear, like, this must be it.
Yeah.
And then it just kept going. It would level up again. It would level up again. Like, by the time the roofs were blowing off, it still had more to give. Like, we were thinking, that was the level, and it got up to about gear 10, I think. Like, interesting, tell your story again when we sort of moved inside.
Yes, we went inside and it really picked stuff. So what happened was, we'd gone into one of the classrooms and all our church members were in this one classroom, and we had another three classrooms where just community members, resort, like tourists were in there. And then we just started singing, like worship music, and all of a sudden it just picked up and you couldn't see outside anymore. It was like white. And then all of a sudden I just started watching, like, at the aircon, like we have like a window type aircon, it started like coming in. So I'm like, John, the aircon's like coming in. So we've got boys like holding that, and then there's like two windows next to it, and I'm like, John, like I could see like them pulsing, and I'm like, they're just gonna fly in. And we managed to just shove a big heavy cupboard in front of it just as they blew in and blew the cupboard like across the classroom. So then we were literally in the storm and we all just sheltered.
You've never gone into the kitchen in a house where there's a lot of cockroaches and you turn on the lights and you watch the cockroaches all sort of run and scramble. That's what it looked like.
It was like jumped into the corner, and it was like you can't describe, because it was so, we couldn't see anything outside because it was like white, and the sound was like when you're walking past an aeroplane, like when it's or like when you're having to board an aeroplane and you're right next to the jet engine and you're it's like the pressure was just going off inside of your ears. Like it was
the sound of tin and metal hitting the building.
Yeah, and it was just, it was like, I've got videos on my Facebook if you wanted to see. Like it was surreal. Like, and then that lasted for about an hour. And then after about half an hour, we're all like, we got used to it. We're like, just the wind was just blowing in. Everything was blowing in.
Women and children were crying, babies, screaming in the corner. The men, we were all sort of standing around, like, sort of at a point of ready. It was sort of strange because it's a weird thing where you have your roles, like a lot of the women with the children being the carers. And the men, like, I couldn't sit down. And Christine's like, can you sit with your kids? And there was a part of me, chilling in Ashford, obviously crying and upset. And I couldn't just sit and relax because, and we talked about it after, because it really is like an instinctual part of how we're made and who we are, that then we know that we have to do something. And if I sit down and relax and I have to do something, I couldn't do it. It was just surreal.
We were concerned more for the fact of the people in the other rooms.
Yeah.
Because we didn't, because our windows blew in, we thought, oh, maybe other people had that same experience and that they were going through something very traumatic like we were. So that lasted about an hour. And then after about half an hour, we got used to it and we were like walking, like sort of moving around in the room more. And then as it started dying down, we could see more outside. But we were in there for about another hour. So it was about 2 hours altogether before we could even consider opening the door. Or even could open the door for that matter because of the wind. And John went and checked on the other class.
Well, it was about probably 30 minutes when it was still pretty crazy. That's when we realised Pastor Jordan was still upstairs. The ceiling had actually collapsed on him, and he found himself in a pretty dangerous, scary spot. I'll just talk a little bit on that, because that, for me, is one of those personal stories that the pastor watched a church that he'd built for the last 7 years literally blow away. And we were up there, we prayed with him for a time as we were watching it blow away, trying to rebuke the storm and do everything you can. But the reason he hung up there while everyone else went down, because I guess he was just having his love moment.
His wife was down with us, and he's got like 5 children, and they didn't know what was happening. She was also like very stressed.
Yeah.
And when he finally came in,
he wasn't happy with him, and a bit of the roof actually fell down and hit him on the shoulder.
Oh, no.
He had to keep it a secret so he couldn't get in. The second typhoon of that day wouldn't come up on him.
The reality set in because I think 8 years ago, they had a really big typhoon here in Yolanda, which came through and just same similar kind of storm, but thousands and thousands of people died, and they were just bodies were in the streets. Like, oh, it was horrible. Like, so everyone was sort of thinking, wow, like, it could be like that. Like, we could be, and we're on a very small island. It's remote. And so there was a lot of realization that we are on our own. Like, there is nobody coming for us.
Yeah, I sort of went out that night. First thing we did was check, obviously, the other classrooms where people were. Thankfully, none of the windows had blown in, and they actually...
Yeah, they were fine.
They actually came out. They had dogs and everything. And they were actually pretty chilled. And we were like, that's good. We sort of watched the storm. It was still raging, but we knew it was...
Coming down. Hump, so
it was starting to calm down.
But it was just... You couldn't even recognize the place. Like, it was just... Everything was destroyed. Like, the church was gone. Like, there was just walls standing in the church. Upstairs in our school, the whole, like, ceiling roof was just ripped off completely. There was coconut trees fallen on our school into our classrooms. There was like, pieces of timber, like a piece of timber wedged into one of our air conditioners. Like, that's how strong the wind was.
Wow.
And it was just, like, before, if you ever saw Shargao, you couldn't see, like, 20 metres in front of you because there was so much greenery and coconut trees. But now it was flat. We could see the ocean from where we were, and it was just...
Wow.
We could see buildings and landmarks through over the next week. We didn't know it existed.
Wow. It was like... And it was just, everything was gone. There was not, like, one building left without, like, everything was destroyed. Like, we were blessed that our house was still standing, and it only had a very small amount of damage. Our house was just flooded, like, because some of the roof came off, but most of it was okay. We were so thankful.
My two moments, I cried twice. During the storm, was just before we left to go check on the other people, because I knew that we were safe. So it was literally just, you know, when you're overcome with, like, grateful to God, because my prayer was protect us, bless us, keep us safe. And it was just tears of glory to God, which was, you know, I mean, it wasn't emotional. I wasn't, never really got to the point of really being terrified or scared. But I knew God had it, and I broke down and just thanked Him for saving my family and the people that were with and keeping us safe and harm. Because when you looked outside, I was certain that people were there. I was almost, you know what I mean, looking out and seeing how flat and everything, I was like, there's people who live in thin shacks out there, there's people who live in plywood roofs and plywood walls, and if all that was a tree to fall on them, and they were dead. My family would have been wiped out. So at that stage, I was certain that there was death that we went out to. Because me and my good friend Don went out pretty much straight away, told Christine that we want to go and check on a few of our good friends who live 10-minute walk away. And I sort of talked to my friend and said, look, we might not come back the same. So because death and destruction isn't something we really deal with in Australia too much. Mm-hmm. And I sort of had a chat with him that we might not come back the same with, like, whatever trauma we might go through by seeing friends and people we love and know dead in their houses. And we sort of both agreed and then set off. And each step we took, we sort of met more people. Everyone that we came across was okay, and we checked on their well-being, and then we checked on this sort of stuff. While Christine was actually at the school, she's got her parallel story where she was managing all the people in our area, like preparing dinner and all that sort of stuff, just to sort of make up.
Right. And did anybody on your island that you're aware of perish?
We actually had on our island, because we were blessed for a few things. One, it was low tide. Mm-hmm. We had storm surges, but they weren't that bad. Up north, they were, like, head on with it, and they had water come through their whole town, like a storm surge. Like, it was amazing, the stories they say. But most of them, went to higher ground. And amazingly, we don't know how, but not one person died in the whole island during the storm.
That's crazy.
One old person died, but nobody knows if it was because of the storm or because of.
And then we'll be able to, like I was saying, the next day when we sort of went to bed, we were all exhausted. Our house was so flooded that we had one dry bed.
We all climbed onto a chair and we all dried our feet.
We had the family of four on a king bed, and we all slept pretty well, to tell you the truth. I think I got up in the middle of the night, and it was so... I hate the word surreal because it gets overused and it gets put into context. But it was surreal, like waking up just to go to the toilet. It was like, is this all real? Mm-hmm. And then pretty much, yes, because you walked across to go to the toilet. It was like, yeah, this is pretty real.
Yeah, it was more that there was still a lot of wind. And so there was a lot of tin, like everything's tin roof here. So that you could just hear tin roof, like tin just going and rattling in the wind all the time. And there was no electricity, no nothing. So that's all you could hear, a big gust of wind still coming. And wind would blow and you'd sort of hear the whole roof moving and you're like, please just don't.
It was like
that in itself, like, was a source of anxiety, because the next however many weeks, nobody had roofs or anything. And actually, I'll probably just go back and talk about the first few days, because we had no communication. We had no, you couldn't even make a phone call. We don't have landlines here or anything. It's all cellular networks. And there was nothing. We actually didn't get cellular networks until like 1 week after the typhoon. And so for about 3 or 4 days.
I said we were, I guess, in shock because it was a beautiful day.
Beautiful. It was like the most beautiful day you've ever seen. And I got up about 6 o'clock and I'm just like, I just got up and I just went out and just walked like back down around the streets. And it was like you started seeing people, you know, and it was very emotional.
Yeah, and that was my thing, like walking out, and that was the second time I cried, and like I'm Christine, I'm on the verge of tears now, but just knowing how much everyone we know and love has lost, wiped out, gone, that's the hardest thing. It's not what happened, it's what it's done to people. That's the part. It's nothing about their houses and whatever. It's the reality of. Yeah. It's a game changer, it's a life changer, and some people don't have enough to come back.
Yeah. Filipino people are resilient, like so resilient. Like every person you saw, it's like, you know what, you've lost everything, but we're still alive. Person you see, it would be like, but we're still alive.
It's Kumusta, like, you know, and then you bring up Mel, you've been here to the Philippines. Kumusta is, how are you? And it's like, we're okay. No house, but we're okay.
But it's like everybody you saw was like, we're alive. And so, you know, it's just, it was just amazing, because from that time on, the community just came together. And so in the following, like the few days after that, there was no electricity. There was no medical at all, no medical help at all. So, and no water, no fresh water. Because all of our water, we can't drink the water from the ground because it's not good. And we're on an island, so there is no water. And so it was running out and it was hot. It was like 35-degree days. There was no shelter because everything was blown away and people were trying to rebuild a shack or something of their house so that they could live in it, because there was nothing. And people were getting heat exhaustion, and actually that is when people started to die.
And dysentery. Because they were drinking water.
From that point on, we had a lot of people die in the community because there was no health care in the first 3 days. There was a small amount of health care available in the main area, but it was overwhelmed. Like, people were like,
Um,
they just, it was over, yeah, like her baby's dying. Like it was really hard in that time. And that's where you felt helpless, like where you thought, and there was nothing. There was no help. There would be helicopters that would fly over. There was no food. A lot of it got destroyed. And so all we would see was helicopters flying over, and people were writing like in big letters on the street, help. Like it was really surreal, like when you would drive around what you saw. And yeah.
Something in the West where, you know, in the West, if this happened by 6 a.m. the next day,
you have help.
We're probably going to see army rolling into town.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I guess our naivety, it's an expectation maybe that we sort of.
Yeah.
Think about it. Yeah. But you knew that, we sort of knew that we were on our own. And so we just sort of came together as like the people who were living around us, our church community, our pastor, and a few of our friends. And we sort of all just banded together, and whatever resources we had, we kept them together. We went out and started, and just tried to clean up a little bit and just sort life out.
Connect with the people in the community that we know were sort of like-minded, you know what I mean? That we're going to probably, because it really took 2 or 3 days before this guy was getting folks to get people off the island. A part of that was he was also bringing stuff in. Another group was trying to, you know what I mean? It was literally just connecting the dots and being out and about enough, because we also didn't know how long gasoline, petrol would last for.
So I think what the storm happened on a Thursday, and on Sunday we had church service at our school, and it was amazing how many people came. So we didn't, we couldn't announce it or anything. People just came.
Wow.
I think it was really just nice to have that time. It was very raw and no one was ready. Like John preached, and he just wasn't ready, hadn't prepared anything, but just got up and preached. And
was that John?
It wasn't a strong message, and I think I went straight to the Book of Job. But yeah, and it wasn't, honestly, it wasn't about the message that day. It wasn't about, it was about the fellowship and the just connecting to God. And we felt that. And even now, like, you know, I mean, like through everything, I don't think I have any built up trauma or anything like PTSD or whatever.
I hadn't experienced what anxiety really ever felt like before, but. When nobody had any bruises or anything like that, it was horrible, because at night when it would rain, you knew that people and your kids, like people that you would talk to, would tell you that when it rains, they're like literally just the whole family, including babies and everything, would be standing under one little bit of roof or something while it rained. So you just knew people were suffering. And so at night when you heard rain, it was like an anxiety would happen, because you couldn't sleep, because you were like, well, like you knew people were suffering and it was horrible. That was like the hard parts. Or if you heard like the metal like moving in the wind, it was like trauma from when
the
storm was. It took a while for that to go away, until the point where you knew that most people had a roof, then you felt okay. But you'd still wake up and be like, oh.
So some of our best friends here who we've had, and they're super close to us, they live in the village. They're locals. They have a 6-week-old baby and a 3-year-old son. And we knew that they were basically sleeping under a sheet of tin just to stay out of the rain. And it was wet season, so when it rained, it wasn't just a few sprinkles. It was like a deluge. And I know, during the coast, the Sunshine Coast, you guys have been through a lot of rain lately. So it's similar to that, where it just rains and it rains bucket loads. You can't. And so that's it. You're sitting there. We're in relative comfort in our house. And you get the guilt of why should we have and why shouldn't they have and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's what Christine, like, it was like a trauma, but like I said, it was like your empathy levels were just set through the roof because we were blessed to get our house spared. But
yeah, it's just that you're surrounded by suffering and it's like really, so that I guess that's why you just do what you can. So people started to organize stuff, we sort of just said we'll just do whatever we can because, if we're able, so why not do it? So we were able to help with some giving some
relief
goods.
I sort of took off on Christine about a week into it. Was it a week? I think it was 1 week. 1 week and I left the island. Sounds horrible. But
see you guys.
I actually had an opportunity to go to get a roof for the school. So if another typhoon came, and it wasn't off the cards, we're in the middle of typhoon season. It's not rare for these things to go back to back. So I went with a group of guys, some of the awesome people we have here on the island, to go and source a roof. So in case this second typhoon or low pressure system came, we had a roof on the school so we could, again, evacuate and probably take a lot more serious round two than what we did round one. And also our concrete slab, the more it was open to water, the more water would seep through the actual cement slab, the less storage we had for the relief goods. So while I was away doing that, I actually sent Christine a photo of a pizza. There was a really good pizza shop in the town that I went to.
No, that's so mean.
Christine wasn't happy with my picture of the pizza.
I bet.
But during this time too, Christine was stepping up and helping with the relief, like, in a major way. Sort of, I couldn't believe what I came back to. Like, we've got rooms. Our classrooms are 6 meters by 8 meters. And probably 4.5 meters high, and these things were almost full to the brim with this emergency aid that was coming in. And like I said, it's literally God would just open up an opportunity to help. You know what I mean? To be that light without having to worry about or think about it. You sort of look and lean on your Christian values and say, literally, what would Jesus do? How would he help? What would he want? Who does he want to help? And how can we sort of do that? So, like I say, we take no credit or glory for what happened through Nissi Academy, the school, or through our own actions. It was just having the courage to sort of put ourselves out there to be used as helpers. Like, you know what I mean? It's really weird. It's
like, even though it was a horrible situation, we still had peace. And strength, and when you, and not everybody had that, and where you feel helpless, but we never, as a Christian, I know that because we have the Holy Spirit with us all the time, even in the worst situations, we still have peace and we can have strength to move forward. And I think when you are living like a kingdom vision, like you know what's to come. It makes the problems here on earth not so bad or bearable a little, because you're living like, you know, eternally, like you've got that eternal thinking, I'm trying to say, or kingdom thinking. So it made it a lot easier.
And some of the best times we had was literally with our people in those moments, in those days after. Like, we had a few people living with us, and they are also strong believers as well, and we had some great times in our house. Like, for me, the memories looking back over this storm, it's not traumatic. It's actually
we actually had some really amazing moments. Like when everything's gone and you have to come together and unify, it's beautiful. Like, it's amazing, and it's you have some really good, amazing moments in there. Yes, it's hard and people are suffering around you, but at the same time, it's amazing that we were able. The Filipino people are amazing in the fact that they're resilient, especially in the province. They can rebuild a house very quickly. They're very resourceful. They just needed the materials, and they can do it. And so, it it's been like 8 months since, or 10 months since the typhoon, and we're almost totally fixed.
And I'm also,
wow.
I also want to shout a big plug out to the people who did step up. Like I said, like the community we have here is one thing. We're lucky to have a huge Christian community back home through Life Church. I think the second phone call I had and received was from Pastor Ashley Good. And it was just basically a check-in. So, are you guys alive? It was like 20 missed calls from mum, from Christine's parents, and also from Ashley Good and Allison. And I mean, church friends and community back home, I'm pretty sure your name came up in there, Mel, that you guys are okay. It was the messages from people that when these phones came back on, it was, we're not alone. We're so not alone. Not only have we got God, we've got all these people that
supporting us.
Supporting us. And like you said,
church isn't just the church you go to. It's like churches grow like a whole body. Like, it doesn't matter where you are. Like, you know, Life Church has been an amazing support to us, financial support to help us to rebuild, and we wouldn't have been able to do that without it. It's people within Life Church who are able to send us amazing amounts of money to rebuild. So we are so blessed to have that. And, it was just amazing. And, so we always felt like God was in control, and we didn't. And I guess that's where our peace comes from, like, because you just have to surrender to the moment that you're in, but knowing that God's in control of it, and that especially when you do have a purpose, like, we know God sent us here to build this school, so it's not complete yet, so we still keep going. So, like, you know, you can fall back on those promises that God has given you in your life. And so even though it was a setback, He was able to give us the hope that we needed to move forward.
To do things. It wasn't just to move forward, to do things. To that family that I told you about now has a concrete house. Like, through those people, through Life Church, through that Christian community, the broader Christian community, they now have a cement house.
What was it made of before?
It was made of plywood and sticks, basically.
Wow.
Very basic. Like, like, that was part of it. Like, we were able to then help them to build a proper house where if a typhoon didn't come, well, the roof might blow off, but they just needed to replace the roof.
Yeah.
And the rest of it's okay. Incredible. There was an amazing, like, some people came out better than the typhoon because of, because of the aid that came and the help that came with it. But, it was
And that's God's method, though, right? Like, you always come out better than what you started with God. So some people in the community didn't get it. Oh, well, they didn't even have a house that nice. It's like, well, they do now because that's where they are. It's and they're like I said, they're good friends, and they're also church members here. So it was amazing that through the love of Christ and this traumatic experience that they got into a place now where, like I said, they don't have to go through that again, like that again.
That's great. That's so good.
It was really funny. Like I said, we got the cell signal back, but it came back really gradually. So around the island, you would see, like, groups of people, like, just stopped on the side of the road with their phones, like, holding it up to the air, like, trying to get that one bar of signal.
The rumors of signal. There's one bar of signal down in Mullinow.
Slowly as they restored, like, the cell towers, like, signals started to come back and it was more stable. And I think we got, and then so we had no power for like 3 months, and so it was like the day that it came back, we were like, it was the most exciting time ever.
It was stressful because the electrical company was here to hook up the line and all that.
Like, actually, if you just think, like, the whole island was stripped of its electricity, like its power poles. Like, we're thinking, there is no way they're going to have electricity back on this island within the year. But
really?
Amazingly, they had most of it restored within 3 months, and so it was amazing. So.
Yeah, like I said, the government Yeah. Big network. They got in electrical contractors from all over the Philippines.
Yeah.
Without the governments and everything here also, like, you know what I mean? This place could have still been in a really bad place even now, 7 to 8 months later. But from where we are, the roads are clean. There's still evidence everywhere of this typhoon. But it's a place that's starting to flourish again.
That's so good. That's so good. Did you guys, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this anyway, but was there any part of you that went, no, we've got a ticket out of here. Like, we could choose a little bit of an easier road. Was it ever tempting at all?
What me and John sort of said, if it got bad, like, we felt like our lives were at risk. Probably not us. We have children.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if our children's lives were at risk,
yeah,
of course you have to be a responsible parent. And we considered that maybe one of us would leave and one would stay behind. That would be the very last resort, and it would be if we really felt like it, we needed to. Mm-hmm. But we never felt that. We always think of it that we had that community of people.
Yeah.
We felt like we were doing more to stay here.
Yeah, basically, the question came up to us, are we going to be helpful or burdensome? Because you really are going to fall into two categories of people. Because if you're not being able to be helpful, then you fall into the burdensome group. And there's plenty of people who are locals who couldn't do anything. They live here. This is where they have to be. If we're foreigners and we're going to be a burden, we had to go. It's basically that simple. We had conversations with some foreigners who were here, who were in that category, and we told them without any confusion to them, they need to go off the island because you're taking away water from somebody who needs it more than you.
Wow.
See, they have the means. Yeah. It's like if you have the means to get off the island and you were, especially we're a tourist island, so there was a lot of tourists here. And so, yeah, it was, everyone was trying to get them off as fast as they can because the limited resources that we have, you had to give it to people that were in need the most, that actually lived here and that didn't have means to just leave.
Yeah.
They can't.
Yeah.
We had to sort out pretty quick what pile you're in.
Yeah.
And then we determined pretty quick that, yes, we're in a position where we could.
In saying that, a lot of people who could, because they had young children and what, chose to leave because it was, like I said in the beginning, it was a little bit scary, like, especially when you have young children.
A bit of looting and not sure what was going to happen.
Yeah, and in sickness, like a lot of kids started getting sick, and just because there was no medical help, a lot of people left because of that.
Yeah.
So
we had a good friend who got close to dying. We sort of got to him probably if he went one more day, he would die. Just because he had hit that exhaustion point plus dysentery, and he was just dying in front of his family's face. Because that was the reality. And too many of those, and it would have been a proper catastrophe.
Wow.
322 was across the entire Philippines.
Yeah.
And I guarantee most of the deaths were pretty after the fact.
And it became nighttime as well. So we got hit right in the middle of the day. But then as it moved through, it was night. And so it becomes more scary because you can't see what's going on. So,
Yeah, that is scary. So how did your girls go through what? How do you feel they went with the whole situation and then?
Yeah, they were traumatized.
We really wish to have our kids. Yeah. Like, we honestly, our kids are a blessing. They seem to be missionary kids, and like you hear that term thrown around, but they are, they come with resilience. I think Ash's biggest crying moment was when she realized we weren't going to go wakeboarding the next day.
Oh my goodness.
Like in the middle of the storm when we were in the classroom as the windows had just blown in and she's crying and then she looks at me and goes, are we going wakeboarding tomorrow? And I'm like, no. Like, I just looked at her like, I just go, no, it's not there anymore.
You know, Dan, actually, I was like, Dan, do you have any questions? Anything you would like me to ask them for you? And he's like, how's the wakeboarding part? That was his concern. Yeah, like, how is it?
It's good now. They missed it. Like,
But our kids, I think Christmas Day, which was the very next 16th, it happened.
Oh, yeah.
17th, 18th, it swirled, it spun.
Right. That's right.
I don't want to say too much. I don't know how young your podcast audience can be or who might hear this. So I'll steer clear, but there was a pretty uncomfortable conversation I had to have with Asher about.
Oh, I see.
And,
yes. Yeah.
And everything like that. And I tell you what, that's almost another time that I cried because it's heartbreaking to break your daughter's heart like that.
Aww.
But her waking up with no presents because she's thinking she's a bad girl was the alternative.
I was thinking of you guys.
Yeah, that's the alternative, you know what I mean? The alternative is my little girl's heart gets broken because she thinks Santa thinks she's a bad kid because that's what we teach them.
Yeah.
I chose to break her heart so she wouldn't. And she had a moment. We had a moment out back at the school.
Oh.
One kid understood the situation, and the other kid, she had a little world shattered.
But it was good because we were able to then take all of our
Christmas Day. These kids, my kids, with the kids who were staying with us, they got all their toys that they could collect that weren't damaged, and they took them out to the people who were staying in another longer term evacuation center, and they handed.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, and they played with a few things that they had around the school. And it was Christmas Day. We cooked up an epic feed because freezers were at the point of melting. So we got a whole bunch of, I think, ham, bacon. It was like.
There was lots of things that happened in that period of time. Like, we could sit here for hours, but yeah, it was something I'll never forget.
it was the best of times and it was the worst of times.
Right.
Like it really was because you learn about yourself, you learn about God, you learn about your neighbours, you learn about your brothers and sisters in Christ. It's nothing like it I've ever gone through in my life to know yourself, to know God, to know everything like that. Like those, I guess, things in
not many people get that opportunity, I guess, to be tested to this, like to the extreme, to experience like that kind of catastrophe, devastation, catastrophe. Like there's not like many people that have experienced stuff like where it's really like everything's destroyed. So it was. Now that after I said that I wanted to experience that the day before,
I take
without
it back.
Thinking about the consequence, I now know that I would never want to experience something.
No.
Or you want anyone else to go through it.
Or you don't. No. And I think that's what it makes you feel, like when you do start seeing other, because it's really easy in our lives to watch the news and see a disaster in another country and go, oh, that's sad, and then gone. But now once you've experienced it, I think you have the first-person perspective of what it's like to experience it, everything that goes along with that. And so it makes you have compassion and more realize just everything that is affected in those lives.
I mean, there's the term need, and I think here in Australia we all have needs, but I think that a lot of us haven't really experienced like desperate need. And I think that's
need.
There's need and there's need.
Well, that's it. There's even electricity was just a need in the end. Like it was something that we just wanted. Like it wasn't a survival. Like when it came down to it, electricity is just a comfort. Like it really is. When you pull it down, you can survive without it. like needs are water and food.
Yeah.
And shelter.
So,
mosquito spray.
Okay, talking about food and water, did you guys ever have to, like, did you go hungry in the first few days? Were there days there where you were?
No, we just had to, it was just, like,
adjusted.
You adjusted. You just have to adjust. And then, like the biggest thing, the biggest concern was there was no rice. And if you know Asian nations, rice is life.
Yeah.
If there is no rice, there's a problem. And so that was the biggest thing, is trying to get rice in.
And we got pretty blessed through it all. We, like I said, we, I don't know, God, we've never, me and Christine sort of, have got a thing in our lives where we've never been left wanting. I've had it in my life. She's had it in her life. God's always provided enough and given us the knowledge that it's enough. So we had a few corned beef and rice days where that's all there was, just rice and a little bit of corned beef mixed in. And honestly, we didn't even have that many of them because people were leaving. They were also giving us food. The people who we were living with had flour, so we even made bread.
Learned how to make bread. So we're making bread because everything used gas
without
ears, so everything's gas. Wow. So I just would make fresh bread. So it was great. Like,
that's
learned
good.
How to do something.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, and it wasn't, we didn't ever went without. We were content in where we were. And I think you can't, in situations like that, like, what else? Like, even if you don't like what's in front of you, think about the people around you. Like, when it comes down to it, we have more than what other people have, just for the fact that we are foreigners, we are privileged.
And like you said, we can get out, we can leave at any point.
We have a privilege, and I think you have to be really careful when you have privilege to complain about any situation, because you, like, we have the opportunity, we could change our situation if we wanted, where people can't always do that. So I think you just have to be careful and be mindful of it. Like, you can't complain. Even if you're a bit uncomfortable, or you're not eating what you want to eat, or you don't have the variety, fine, whatever.
Yeah,
water, I think, was the closest worry that we had. Running in, we got down to about 20 litres of water, which...
For your family?
For two families.
It's hot and you've got like 8 or 9 people or 10 people to drink that.
And use it for cooking also. Like, you still have to be careful with cooking water because of the flood waters that would come and go, means septic tanks overflow, groundwater.
Yeah.
And so all these things, like, a lot of problems.
Mm.
Without, especially without amenities and everything like that, it's just perspective, like you say, and perspective is our new, like, don't complain.
John, I remember a story that you shared with us in our first podcast conversation when you were talking about you had really just arrived on the Philippine Islands and you were taking a boat ride that went for a couple of days, but you later found out that it should have just lasted for like a few hours or something. You might have got a loss, and you were saying how you were struggling really to fall asleep on this boat because you were just like on tiles, and you looked around, you felt God say to you, you have to adjust your level of comfort, like, welcome to the Philippine Islands, look around you, and everybody else was sleeping and you were like, all right, God, like, I've got to adjust my mentality, I guess, my mindset of comfort. And then you fell asleep and you slept like a baby, you said. So look at how that has helped you so much all these years later as well. It's just, you can just see all the work that God's been doing in you guys, and I'm in so much admiration for you guys, just your walk. Oh. I mean, yeah. I know that can be hard to hear, but I love you guys. I've got so much respect for you both.
Thanks, and we actually used your story yesterday. I was talking about last night at our Bible study.
Yeah.
I was talking because, you know, there's the big pro-life argument at the moment, pro-life versus abortion. We were talking in our Bible study, and I use your testimony a lot. And just use yours and Dan's testimony, you know, about your whole journey that you went through with, you know, pregnancy and finding out that there was something wrong, and then giving that options, and that just trusting God, and that, you know, when really we just trust in God and His plans and just hand it over to him, whatever the outcome. Mm. You know, we can see miracles happen in our lives, and that's where the most work in our faith is done. And,
yeah.
You know, but we have to let God have that opportunity. If we set limitations for him, he can't ever show as much. Like, we're limiting what he can do in our life. And I think that's, you just have to trust.
I've sort of got a saying, Mel, to respond to you, like, we're not inspirational, we're inspired, you know what I mean? It's a cool saying, but it's so true. Like, we're not, people look at us and say, look what you're doing, like, you know, look at why we're doing it. Like, we're inspired by Jesus, we're inspired by God.
Yeah.
And it's,
but that's what I love.
It's sort of our way, sort of helps me, yeah, you know what I mean, to continue, try to be humble and know that it's not us what we're doing, it's actually, yeah. We're just living in the shadow of greatness. So
yeah.
We appreciate compliments and we love us. And no, we love you too. But it is, you know what I mean? It's an inspired life. It's not a.
Yeah, exactly. No, I get that. But I do, like, I really look up to you guys in just that you're living 100% for Jesus, you know? It's like, it's not your life, it's his life. And you've counted the cost, you've taken up your cross, and you're following him. And that's, it's good to have an example of that to look to.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, when you do give your life 100% to God, he knows your desires of your heart, and he will fulfill those in your life. And you know, we've never been more content in our life and more blessed in our life than we have. You know, people look at us and go, oh, you, like, you know, when you sometimes people can't understand why you would give up. You know, Australia's a good place to live. and we had good work, we had good jobs, and then you give it all up to go to the Philippines and not necessarily live in the same standard that you would live in Australia, and you're reliant on, you don't have financial freedom and you're not financially, I can't think of another word, but you are reliant on other people, like we're missionaries. But in saying that, like, amazing things have happened since we've been here. Like, John, his wildest dreams come true. God has blessed him and, like, he travels the world now as the Philippine surf coach. And
it's amazing.
That's his, like, dream job that he's always wanted, because God knows his desires and he knows how he can use him in those places. And he is going to use him to make make a difference there as well. But, yeah, like, God, you know, it's not like you've forgotten. You know, you have to suffer for Jesus. Like, you know, it's necessarily suffering when you're a missionary. It's, you know, there's hard times that will push you, but the growth and the blessing that comes out of it and the utter contentment that you get is, you know, wouldn't change our lives for anything.
Yeah, we're sent as missionaries, but it turns into your life. We don't, you know what I mean? It's not a role or an act or anything we're playing. It's literally the life that we're living, and the life, like every life, it adapts and it changes and it grows. And
So if there's anyone out there that's like, I want to do something and travel and do something for God, or, you know, you feel a calling on your life to be a missionary, don't worry about the fact that, you know, what you miss out on or what that you might not be financially stable when you're a missionary, but God provides, like, trust me.
Forget your 5-year plan and focus on his, like, it's...
Yeah.
So much better than your 5 years, trust me. Like, it's mind-blowing where he takes you. Like, and Christine says that about me, but she's running a school. She's literally stepping hurdles and stuff that is impossible. I love my wife, but she's got boundaries and capabilities. God's given her so much more than what I knew she ever had, and I can just sit back and be proud of my wife and watch her literally do things and run things and we have talks, and she knows it's the wisdom of God that's running through her veins. To the way she handles situations at school are two very different things.
But yeah, it's just we love, you know, the doors that God's opened up.
That's fantastic. Well, I think that's a really good place to leave it. Do you mind if I get you guys to pray for our listeners?
No problem. For Mel and her podcast, Lord, I ask that you grow her audience more, because more people need to know and understand the lives that God can get people to live and the life-changing moments that can happen when you're under the shadow of God. Lord, I pray that somebody out there listening to this is possibly inspired and just makes it a choice to lean into you, God, to trust in you, to commit to you, or even just be inspired to get to know you more, God, and understand that you're not just an ATM God, but you're a God that's involved, that loves, that cares, that cherishes his children, and can give so much more than what we can ever imagine. So, Lord, I just pray that your Holy Spirit go through this podcast and just starts entering some hearts, start entering some thoughts and some minds and some prayers, that amazing things can develop. God's stories like this and better than this can come from somebody hearing this out into a community somewhere around the world, or a community in a particular town, or even just a household that hears this message. So, Lord, just let your Holy Spirit use our story to bless others, to grow others, and to turn others to look towards your light. In Jesus Christ's name, amen.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you know somebody who would really benefit from listening to this episode, then click on the share button and send them a link. Also, I'd so love it if you could take the time to quickly subscribe and write me a review. If you want to get in touch for any reason, DM me on Instagram @Mel_Lynham. Talk to you soon.